Hey, everybody. Tom Salemi of Device Talks here. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly Podcast. One fantastic episode coming your way a little later in the podcast. I will talk with Dr. Maria Artunduaga. She is the CEO and founder of Samai. Samai was the grand prize winner at MedTech Innovators Contest at AdvaMed a few months back. Maria and I tried to connect before this, but it took us a bit. And in the episode, you'll find out of one of our more recent reasons why we didn't get this podcast interview until now. It's kind of funny. But Maria's a great medtech entrepreneur. Samai has a really interesting approach to helping folks manage their respiratory condition and their respiratory diseases. And it's such an important area. Really happy to be bringing this topic to our podcast. Before that, Rachel Robinson, the COO of MassMedic, joins Chris Newmarker and me for the Newmarker's Newsmakers. We'll talk about all the big news of the week, and we'll also learn about MassMedic's upcoming symposium and gala, which is happening on March 6th. So lots going on. Before we begin the podcast, please join us on Tuesday, February 11th, for our first Device Talks Tuesdays of the season. It's brought to you by Acuity MD. And of course, we'd love to see you at Device Talks Boston. It's happening April 30th and May 1st at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. Numbers look great. We're rolling out the speakers now. We'll have the agenda up fairly soon. It should be up maybe even by the time you're listening to this podcast. So you'll get to see who will be talking. We'll have names, well, folks from Baxter, Medtronic, Boston Scientific, and more. And of course, Ivan Tornos, the CEO of Zimmer Biomet, will be opening the whole event. So really looking forward to seeing you in Boston on April 30th and May 1st. And if you're in the Minnesota area, we'll mention this. We've mentioned this before. We'll mention it in the podcast. Device Talks Minnesota is back on June 11th. Very excited to be back in Minnesota. Please join us there. You can go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register for that. We don't have any speaker or agenda information up there yet, but it'll be a great day of MedTech. Wait if you want to. I certainly understand. Focus on Boston first. Our early bird rate is expiring very soon. So if you want to save yourself some serious dough, don't wait on registering. Go to boston.devicetalks.com. All right, folks, with all of that said, my pleasure to bring you this great episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Let's go. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well. Back at home. Big week.
Yeah.
Big week.
You were at the conference that shall not be named, but I hope you had a productive week.
Wait, was it Dark Wizarding Conference? Or like, what was going on here?
You
like,
tell me. You're the one who went. Yeah. Now, all of our great sponsors are there, and you give them great coverage.
We got to go there. We got to be with these good companies. And, you know, it was a good week in Anaheim at MDM West. And,
I'm on fire. Why'd you say?
Yeah. No, just like, no. But, no, it's a great conference. A lot of really good meetings. I mean, just because, I mean, their expo floor is huge, and I mean, there's tons of companies to meet with, and it's always good to really talk to like that whole network of suppliers for the industry, actually, because you know they're producing the components and the tubes and you know motors and all the things that you know need to go into medical devices, and so you know they have a good pulse on what the medical device companies need right now, and you know what their trends are, you know, to a degree as well. So it's always good. And do you know what the biggest thing I heard around MD&M West with all my conversations was?
They wish they were at Device Talks Boston.
I heard that. I did. Actually, Tom, I mean, honestly, like, though, like, a lot of the conversations, there was a lot of, like, really good stuff about Device Talks that people said. That's nice. It's always great to, you know, talk to all these
Stop. Tell me more. No, what was the big thing?
A lot of them were talking about minimally invasive, you know, procedures, okay. Like, yeah. You know, minimally invasive, like everywhere. I mean, and I mean, it's a little wonder. I mean, pulse field ablation is such a hot space right now, and it's just, you know, it's like kind of just galvanizing even more this whole idea that, you know, there's all these, you know, procedures that, you know, used to have to go into the hospital and have like a real surgery with that, you know, now you can get into a cath lab and get it in a much more minimally invasive way. And I think, I don't know, do you think, this is a good discussion we had, like, is surgical robotics is minimally invasive, right? I mean, you're doing laparoscopic.
It's used for minimally invasive. I mean, minimally invasive is such a large number. Everything is, no one's saying, hey, you know what? I'm going the opposite direction. I'm going to create a maximally invasive device.
Full bore. No, we're gonna.
Everybody's getting less invasive. That's the whole point. So, I mean,
yeah, yeah. I don't want to look. I don't want to look at like the yeah. I don't. Yeah. Do you want to be cut open or do you want us to?
So, no, that, I'm glad. There's a lot of great companies there, I'm sure, who are making that all happen. And of course, we're being jokers here on the podcast. Chris, we've got a guest in the studio, and I feel as if we're being rude.
Yes. She's just sitting here laughing at us like, oh, look at these.
She's on the floor laughing. She can't stop. Oh, my God. They are just hysterical.
I was trying not to make noise as I laughed.
It's Rachel Robinson, the COO or COO of MassMedic. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So you two are experts in medtech, and you've got a unique perspective on this. So Brian Johnson, of course, is the co-founder of Mass Device and Device Talks. He's the godfather of Device Talks, as we like to say.
He's now, I love it.
He's the head of MassMedic. Rachel, where you obviously run things, really, but Brian, you know.
I didn't say it.
So, yeah. So you both can tell me, how awful is Brian to work with? You can just be honest.
Oh, my goodness.
Gosh. Come on.
Yes.
We'll push pause. We'll push pause. click. All right. We're not recording. Go ahead.
You know what's so funny? Everyone asks me all the time. They're like, how did you find your way to MassMedic? Because I was not in the nonprofit space. I wasn't doing anything on the advocacy side. I was working in product development. They're like, how did you get to MassMedic? I'm like, well, there was this guy, Brian Johnson, and I had known him for a few years. And, you know, he pitched me on the job, and I said, no way, I don't want that. And then he kept pitching, and I was like, oh, okay, all right, we got something going here. And honestly, it's been a blast. It's been almost 5 years. Oh, actually, I think we might be on my anniversary. I don't even know. I think it might be this week.
I
think I missed it in the craziness, but it's been good.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, Brian's great. Yeah, you started January 2022.
Yikes. So, yeah. What happened? Okay, so it's 4 years then.
Four years.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, it was 2020. February 2020.
You're right.
Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Yeah, no, so it's been 5 years. It's been awesome.
Fantastic.
That's fantastic. No, Brian actually, he got me to join Device Talks. He recruited me a couple of times. Yeah, he does not take no for an answer. So
he was part of me getting involved with this company. You know, it's been like 8 years. 8 years.
It all comes full circle.
Totally. What a force in the industry, Brian Johnson is. So,
Brian Johnson, well, we salute you.
I was hoping we'd get some dirt, but you folks are doing...
I'm a little more polished than that. This is a morning podcast.
I mean, Rachel, does Brian have a Genghis Khan School of Management book on his desk, or is it the Attila the Hun School of Management? Like, you know,
I mean, or Sun Tzu, right? It's a little
art. a little jiu-jitsu, like strength when you're weak, weakness when you're strong.
Know how to pounce, but also know when to stand back.
We're learning so much. Yes. So Brian, of course, left Device Talks to take over at MassMedic, and you both have done a great job building this organization. As a Boston, Massachusetts guy, I'm really thrilled and excited with all the things that you've done to amplify our industry in this state and beyond. And one of the things that's coming up is, and I think you started it, right? The symposium and gala. Tell us a bit about that. I went for the first time last year, and I was... it was fantastic.
We were so thrilled to have you there. I'm so glad you got to experience, you know, so we're a few years under our belt here. So you got to experience the polished version. Those who came in 2021, I give them so much kudos for taking that kind of ride with us. And then, you know, it's grown from there. So, I mean, back in 2021, when I started thinking about what the symposium could be, I kind of started selfishly thinking about what my favorite conferences were. And some of my favorite conferences are the clinical stuff. So the folks who are super nerdy and are getting up there to talk about research and things that excite people in the audience, things that inspire. And so I started thinking about how do we bring that to tech? Because sometimes tech conferences, it's a little harder to get folks to open the vest. And and it's a constant struggle, which I know you guys also share and try to do a really great job with. But how do you get them to lower their guard and share not just what they're doing, but what they're interested in doing and where they see the industry going? And that's what the symposium has become. We use the words collegial, uncandidly clear, right? So uncommonly candid is kind of what we try to say, is people getting up to share interesting ideas and perspectives that will inspire the audience. And every conversation is crafted to be the beginning of the conversation, not the end, right? So our, we get panelists up there, but the idea is not that it stops with the panel. It's that it leads into the next discussion. So it's a lot of fun. We have that coming up on March 6th. So it's a big one.
All right.
And then, so we do that for a full day, and then in the evening, we get the medtech industry to let their hair down a little bit and get together, and we do two things. We try to say thank you in two different ways at the gala. We say it by honoring a pioneer in industry, folks like last year's recipient, Mike Minogue, who, by the way, is a speaker at this year's symposium. His Tales from the Other Side fireside chat with Joe Mullings is going to be incredible in our cardiac session. So you're going to want to be, you're going to be in the room for that one. But not just his work in industry, right? Leading Abiomed to now J&J MedTech, but his work with MedTech vets, right? And the incredible work he's done to train military veterans to be in the medical device industry. Those are pioneers.
Right.
Our recipient this year is Marianne Heino, the former CEO and chair of the board at Lantheus. Marianne is an incredible force of nature. I'm not going to take her thunder by giving, you know, her speech for her, but she's been an incredible driver in industry. She used her background in nursing to drive industry and innovation for the last, I don't know, 30 years, and is now enjoying a very much earned retirement. So we're kind of thrilled to have her. So that's one way that we we honor impact at the gala. But the other way is by saying thank you to everybody who's in the room. Every person who's in that room, their work has touched lives, and they don't always see it. And while I'm sure they would like to hear thank you from MassMedic, we bring in the patients to tell their stories and to tell their story of how the world is a better place because of the work that the medtech industry does. So folks like a girl named Lauren from Insulet, whose pods gave her her life back as a type 1 diabetic. Folks like Mike Hugo, who spoke at our conference last year, who's living every day to the fullest with a glioblastoma because of NovaCure's products.
Wow. He was amazing. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And he went from running marathons and Ironmans to getting pedicures with his girls. But he gets to do that because of the work that we all do in industry. And this year's speaker, Justin Kelly, is just an incredible person. He's an actual patient advocate. He's been in the industry for years and was in the right place at the right time to hear about a treatment for a disease he didn't know he had yet.
Wow.
And is now living, again, life to his fullest after treatment for colorectal cancer, right? You're 45. You don't think this is going to happen. It happens.
Right.
So this is what we like to do at the gala. And, you know, we get to have a little hair down party experience. But it's really just a celebration. It's a thank you to the industry. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to it. It's 27 days away. The gray hairs are already there for the non-video podcasting. But it's a blast.
And you have it at the Encore?
So we're doing it at the Renaissance Seaport this year. So, you know, we just that little venue switch, change it up a little bit, get exciting.
Get it by the Seaport.
Yeah,
nice.
Good. I won't lose $100 on the way to my car.
That we heard from folks too, but also the traffic getting in and out of Everett's not great. So
it's not terrific.
We heard people get very excited about Seaport.
That's great. So, no, it definitely had a celebratory feel and a party feel. Kind of not to it wasn't a prom, but it was definitely great to see everyone dressed up and just kind of having fun and not like just handing out business cards and just kind of working the crowd.
Exactly.
Everyone just really did chill.
Everyone really chilled. It's a nice way to connect, and I know you guys are seeing this with your conference too. It's Device Talk's a great event, but right now the industry is going through so many changes. Right, there's so many socioeconomic, geopolitical, whatever the words you want to throw in there. You know, I'd like
stuff is happening.
We'd like something precedented at this point. That would be thrilling. But it's more important than ever to come together to share those best practices, to share lessons learned, to share how people are planning, because we are learning from the impact of the last 5 years. So how do we make sure that those conversations are happening at the level that that helps companies stay afloat in this industry? So that's what the symposium is.
I would say, too, it's such important work, especially for Boston, because, I mean, being in Minneapolis, it's a smaller metro, and, the medical device industry, it's like strength in the area is just ubiquitous. I mean, I run into people in the industry around all the time, and anybody who follows the economy is like, oh, yes, medical device companies are extremely important for our economy. But, I mean, Boston, I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, it can kind of get lost that, like, yeah, there's, like, a huge one of the largest medtech hubs in the country. And, to have that kind of community is just so important.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, and we're so lucky as a state, right, that we are big enough in life sciences that we have an industry representative for medtech and an industry representative for biotech. Like,
right?
The fact that you have two organizations that have sustained themselves for, I think we're all both coming up on 30 years this year. It's an incredible testament to the ecosystem and the economy in Massachusetts for life sciences in general. But medtech can kind of sometimes be the little brother that's like, no, we do the cool things. Look at the cool things. So our job is to make sure the companies are getting out there and talking about them.
Are you reaching out to, there's been a lot of conversation on LinkedIn about encouraging young people to pursue medtech as a career, because you're right, it's an overlooked industry. I really wasn't aware of it when I started covering it. I mean, you know these things are out there, but you don't know what medtech is. But what is MassMedic doing to raise awareness broadly, but also bring young people into our industry? Because it's really a great industry to work in.
You are 100% on that. So one of the things we've done over the last few years is create our Why MedTech campaign, which we rolled out in conjunction with the state. So really gathering the stories of people who are in industry to talk about why they do it. And everyone has a different why, right? And everyone gets into it in a different way. So that's kind of one of the programs that we've worked with Mass Life Sciences Center and with the state government. But then also partnering with our individual companies and our member companies. We have almost 400 members that we represent, and that's just in medtech. But they're each doing things because they also recognize, Insulet's going out and creating tech centers, Best Buy Health community tech centers, in order to try to help these kids realize at an early age that anything is possible. You can be in tech. Manufacturing jobs are some of the highest paid jobs for non-college trained employees in Massachusetts. I remember a few years ago talking to the COO of Insulet at the time. He goes, do you realize that we're paying six figures for manufacturing jobs right now? And that's a year or two of training. And now they've partnered with the state in order to get that training compensated, right? So there are so many things that we can do as an organization to bring all of the pieces together to make sure that it's getting the word out and it's getting people excited about life saving.
Do you feel that our industry in Massachusetts, the medtech industry in Massachusetts, is going through any changes in sort of the number of large companies that are represented here? Chris and I like to have a playful battle about which is the most influential hub of medtech.
I think you know where I'm going to come down on this.
But Minnesota, right?
I say sure, Minnesota's great, but then you have to live in Minnesota. It's like, who wants to do that now? I think they're both incredible powerhouses in the industry, and I think you need both. Like, I think it doesn't work if one place has everything and everyone wants to be there. There's simply not enough space. It doesn't work. Everyone's got a different lifestyle too, right? Like it's so, I mean, I'm always going to be Team Massachusetts. We have wristbands that say so in case anyone's curious. We'll be giving them out at the symposium. I think it's, there's definitely some changes. I think Massachusetts set a standard for a really long time in life sciences and we've done very well.
Absolutely.
But there are always people and always states that are going to look and say, great, how can we do that right. too? So you always have to be understanding how to collaborate, how to up the ante. What are you offering? How are you incentivizing people? I mean, I live in downtown Boston. It's not cheap, but I absolutely love it here. And I, when I've looked at moving other places, I'm like, nope, this is where I want to be. So I'm gonna do what I do where I want to do it. So I think it's critical to have multiple areas that people can go to, but always Tom, Team Massachusetts.
Team Massachusetts for sure. But you're right about needing, we're very excited to be back in Minnesota for Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. And I am, don't tell Chris, but I'm envious of the higher, I feel like MedTech does have a higher profile in Minnesota. I think it just, maybe because it is the smaller metro, that it is a bigger part of the conversation. Whereas to Chris's point, in Massachusetts, it gets covered up by a lot of other industries, but there are some big players here. There are a lot of big players here, and I meet people all the time who work in medtech.
Yeah.
But we never we don't know it until the fourth or fifth time we've gotten together. It's not something that people talk about as much. So.
It is nice, though, to be able to just walk down the street and run into medtech people. People don't realize that Boston is such a small city. It's tiny. Yep. I walk across the bridge to Cambridge, and I'm running into medtech people. I'm walking downtown Financial District. I'm running into medtech people. I'm sitting on a rooftop with a friend, and they've invited people they've met in the South End. And, oh, by the way, it turns out that they work in medtech, too. And it's that's just a cool place to be.
That's cool.
A nice community.
Very cool.
I have this image of you like Mary Tyler Moore throwing your hat in the air in a Boston street. I'm bringing that Minneapolis reference. I've seen the statue,
that's
by the
Minneapolis
way.
Minneapolis.
I'm bringing them together. I'm bringing us all together. Yeah. I've seen the statue. Right. I love the statue.
It's a little colder, but the cold blow of the hair in the wind.
Fine, you know? It's got to get more cross-country skis here. I mean, it's fine.
All right. We're looking forward I'm looking forward to attending the gala and the symposium. We'll be there. And how can folks get tickets if they haven't done that yet?
Absolutely. So the gala is sold out.
Okay.
It did actually sell out a few weeks ago for that. But thank you. There are a few tickets held aside for some last minute sponsors. So if folks come in at the last minute and want to say, hey, we've got 4 weeks, we'd love to sponsor, we might be able to get them into the gala. Symposium tickets are still available. I think we're about 350, 400 right now, which is where we like to be 4 weeks out. That's awesome. But it's an intimate kind of conference, right? Mm-hmm. There's no show floor. It's a intimate conversation day. So you can go to our website, massmedic.com, and we have a whole page for the gala and symposium. So you can see all the speakers, all the topics. We have three different tracks in the afternoon. So it's a really fun environment, and you can go there to get tickets.
Fantastic.
Looking forward to it. All right, Chris Newmarket, did you bring a basket of newsmakers for us?
Nice basket of newsmakers. Sorry, I didn't bring a picnic blanket, no bottle of wine. I'm sorry, Tom. I'm sorry. But we got the newsmakers. So the Newmarkers newsmakers, number five on the list, is actually a Boston-based company. Here we go, right? I mean, or Massachusetts-based. I mean, Boston Scientific. We were talking earlier about pulse field ablation. PFA and the Farapol system, help drive, for their cardiovascular business, it drove 28.8% sales growth in the fourth quarter. Overall, Boston Scientific is expecting, double digit sales growth this year. Just a great example of, they've really, worked hard to, go in and, kind of disrupt this whole surgery space. And wow, it's a real success story right now in the industry.
Yeah, I had mentioned on LinkedIn the interview I did with Mike Mahoney at Device Talks Boston in 2023. Yeah. And I remember as we were walking to the interview, we were talking about market caps. And he was very happy with his market cap at the time. And I looked at the market cap today, and it's more than twice what it was 2 years ago. It's insane. It's amazing how quickly this company is growing. And just looking at the Big 100 list, I think they were number 11 this time. So it'd be interesting to see if they were. Yep, number 11. Be interesting to see if they break in and into the
Once
top.
Once all 10. The earnings reports check out, we do a little preview, you know, on Mass Device on where things might go later this year.
So. So Rachel, you must talk to Boston Scientific a lot.
Yeah, so we have
like never heard of them.
I don't know. I've not heard of them. Could you share with me? Are they in Boston? No, great company. I mean, I think what is really exciting to me though is the IVL space as well. So I think the acquisition of Bold Medical, we've got a couple companies in membership also that are doing things in that space. That I think is going to be the next huge driver. And I think that's the challenge, right? Especially when you're talking about what the hot trend is going to be. It's like, okay, how as a company do you follow these trends? How can you even start to predict? You can't start to predict it. You get into a space thinking I'm going to change the world in this space, but you don't know if that's going to be the hot up and coming thing. So I think Boston Sci is doing a great job of trying to eyeball what's up next and stay ahead of the curve. Now, you know, I would say that I think that the funding early stage has dropped off a little bit. I'd like to see that pick up, but that's just my personal perspective. You know, you pay big multiples when you wait till the end, but it's hard for those companies to get there.
Yeah, no, very true. And Boston Scientific with Bolt had a very unique relationship where it was had been spun out of the company and then brought back into the company. Yeah. So very
cool.
Innovative approach to innovation and to bringing in new technology. So great. Well, IVL, you're right. IVL is one of those spaces that just, I think it's interesting to see all these different programs emerge now. Back in the old days when I covered VC, I think there would have been like 50 IVL companies that VCs had funded to try to, that's not the way it happens anymore, but I like the way it's done now. It's more measured, it's more thoughtful, and looking forward to it bearing more fruit. So
I'm hopeful at least that, I mean, we're starting to see more IPOs. I mean, we're starting to see, I mean, at least it feels to me that there's a lot of M&A going on right now. So, I mean, it feels like if you're seeing all these exits that were successful, that should, like, fingers crossed, you know, drive some more investment, like, on those earlier stages, because, you know, they can see, like, oh, there's exits. You don't have to get acquired, you know, like, IPOs are, like, this extra option now that, you know, that are back.
I'd love to see that come back. You know, I don't think it made a lot of the national news, and I'm not quite sure why, but, I mean, did you guys see Beta Bionics
became
a billion-dollar company? Like, that's insanity. That was, and again, talk about Boston companies being overlooked a little bit. I'm just
That was on Mass Device. So
All right, good. But, I mean, that's insane, right? So I agree with you, Chris. I think the IPO is back.
Their valuation went, like, way up when they initially, and yeah, it was just nuts. It was
crazy.
Great number five. Can't believe that's number five, Chris Newmarket.
I know. There's a lot going on, Tom. A lot going on. It's a great week.
Bring on number four. My goodness. I'm already full.
And I just got to say here, this number five was written by Associate Editor Sean Hooley. You know, while I was at MD&M West with Managing Editor Jim Hamrand, I mean, Sean was really, really keeping things really – I mean, he always keeps things really going on Mass Device. But, I mean, just definitely like putting in some really good work this week.
When you and Jim walk through the halls of MD&M West, is there someone like spreading rose petals in front of you too? Because you're just such admired members of the media.
I mean, yeah, it felt like, you know, we were like Oasis announcing we're doing that reunion tour. I mean, it was like wow, the excitement was just like, hey, we're in the house.
No, yeah, better to be the Oasis than Black Sabbath, where Ozzy's people getting around and it's the last tour.
Is this a good idea? Should you do this?
So we want to be Oasis in that scenario.
I like that. Yeah, that's pretty good. Like, you know, we're resting and ready. Gosh. So, okay, number four on the list. This was actually, you know, from January 31st. I wrote this, but it's this actually came in after our last newsmakers, and it's actually gotten a lot of attention. Was, you know, ResMed announced their Q2 results. They kind of run on a different type of fiscal year, but their revenue was, you know, up 10% in the second quarter. It was street beating. But their stock took a hit because, I mean, there's just kind of a lot of questions around GLP-1s and, you know, whether that could, you know, reduce, you know, demand for CPAPs. And, you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, ResMed has this very strong argument that they think that eventually, that health providers will, I mean, people don't want to be on these GLP-1s forever. They need to, like, adapt their lifestyles, and, you know, CPAPs will be something that could, you know, go along with GLP-1s. But, you know, it's not materializing yet, and it kind of seems, at least at the analysts and maybe the investors are kind of like making a bet that's going to, you know, kind of take some time for that, you know, to come about. And, you know, perhaps that might be the same way too. I mean, I know in the diabetes space, there's a lot of similar arguments around diabetes tech. You know, it's like, well, if people lose weight, well, less people with diabetes, but, you know, then, you know, the companies making the CGMs and whatnot are like, no, this is a technology that's going to go really well with it because you're becoming much more concerned about your weight and you're going to want to track your blood sugar a lot more, like, going forward. So, it'll be something to watch.
I know McFarrell has a good pushback for folks who say connected health tools are going to basically take away business from ResMed and their connectivity platform.
Yeah, whereas he's more optimistic
that, no, these are actually going to help people identify that they have apnea and that they need a CPAP to sleep comfortably and to live a healthy life. So it's interesting how all these techs, from pharma to tech, is really swarming onto med tech and creating some uncertainty, but I like our long-term chances. Rachel?
100%. I think there is absolutely a place for GLP-1s, and I think there's an excellent use case. Med device is never, the tech's not going to go away, right? There's not a long-term plan for a lot of these patients, and we're already hearing actually a lot of stories of folks who are a year in saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. But then the weight comes back. It's not a sustainable long-term solution. So I think there's going to be a combo of a lot of things, right? And that's where MedTech will still continue to play a huge role. So it's definitely a thing, and it's something that is impacting the industry. But I agree with Mick at ResMed. I don't think this is something that people need to be too concerned about.
Yeah.
And I think Stryker and others have made the point that there are folks who are too obese to really undergo procedures or to have implants in. And if you could help those people achieve more manageable weights, then you create a whole new customer base 100%. For surgical procedures. So we'll see. Like I think we're all in agreement. We'll bet on MedTech long term.
Don't count MedTech out. Don't do that. All
right. Nice woo-woo, Rachel. All right, Kristen Marker. What's number three?
Number three on the list. We've got Globus Medical acquiring Nevro for $250 million. And I mean, Nevro, it's like, you know, implantable spinal cord, you know, stimulation for pain relief. And they've been, you know, there's been extra challenges for them because Medtronic's now out with their Incepta device, so they've been competing against Medtronic. And I mean, Globus is this, you know, is a in the ortho space is a big company, and, you know, like big spine tech company. So they're making a bet and buying Nevro, and they're going to be competing against Medtronic with the tech.
Yeah. I think that one's interesting. I mean, I was looking as I nerded over the financials last night because I was actually very curious, because 250 seems initially like a low number. You look at it and you're like, wow, why would they sell so low? But if you actually look at the financials for Nevro, they had a significant amount of debt and liability. It doesn't look like it's not that great of a deal as you kind of pour into it a little bit more. But I think my initial reaction in industry was like, ooh. Well, Nevro's been around for a while, and that's a pretty cool treatment. I think it would have gone higher, but I think Globus may have made a pretty good bet here. Like, I think that could go well, so I'm hopeful on that one.
No, that's a great point, and I made a comment about the price myself, and again, with the revenue at $400 million, you're like, how this will pay for itself in a year, but I hadn't looked into the debt and stuff, so that's a great point.
And you're competing against the largest medical device company in the world. So, yeah, that's, yeah.
That's another thing.
That's
another one.
The spine space, though, has just been fascinating with Stryker's selling off of its implant business to the Fiscaliosi brothers and, of course, High Ridge Medical emerging. And now this, it's, you're definitely seeing a kind of a big sword of sorts in the spine space. So it'll be interesting to see.
And I know your spine implant business is tingling from all this news, Tom.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My head's shaking at that one. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, such a dad joke. I mean, at least I'm a dad, but, you know, yeah.
You should probably change the name of the podcast to the Dad Joke
Dad
podcast.
Jokes in MedTech.
So, good move by Globus, and Spine's heating up, and we'll see where things are headed. All right, what's number two, Chris Neumarker?
Number two on the list. We've got BD is going to be, they plan to, to separate its life sciences business from the company. You know, so they're going to begin this process and figure out the best route to do that. The interesting thing is spinning out. Selling this business, you know, what ends up happening, it's going to make BD like a pure play med tech company. So I we've seen other similar deals with other big companies. I mean, or, you know, like Edwards spinning off their, you know, connected care business and whatnot. And it just seems we are seeing like more med tech companies, especially in these times with all kinds of uncertainties. They're really like, let's get focused on something, you know, and this seems like one of those types of deals.
I have comments, but so on one hand, if your other two exciting newses hadn't been about acquisitions, I would be more concerned, I think, about spin out. So spinning out because the business can stand alone and is strong enough to stand alone on its own is one thing. Spinning out to sell to private equity is a different one sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I get a little concerned about, okay, what is that actually going to mean? Right. So the details are going to be what really matters as they do this. But BD is massive. They've had a lot of really different style business units for a long time. So it could be a really good thing for them. And it's potentially a good thing for industry that there's buying and selling happening. But the proof is going to be in the pudding on this one is what happens to those. And also the Embecta spin out, you know, it was a great idea, but there has been a lot of layoffs in Massachusetts, you know, and it happens, right? You try something, you go down a path, it doesn't always work. Okay, great. It's good to pivot. But
they're trying that patch pump, and it just
it just didn't quite go the way they wanted it to. But it seems as though they found out fairly early, so it's just trying to understand what that would mean for all of their businesses.
It'd be interesting to see what BD gets, what kind of funds they receive for this, you know, and how they use that money through acquisitions and investments to speed their own growth. Just reading, this was an article written by Sean Hooley. Yep. This is a $5 billion business.
Yeah.
I mean, holy
moly. Yeah. That's not nothing.
Wow. Yeah.
That is, that's a billion here, a billion there.
Et cetera. Wow. I mean, okay. Maybe if you're Elon Musk, you'd be like, oh, that's nothing. It's just like a change in my pocket. You know, but yeah.
Right. You're talking about a lot of money there. Yeah.
But you're right. We're seeing a lot of sorting of companies. Some, I think, make strategic sense. Some make financial sense. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out long term for sure.
Totally.
So, all right, Chris Neumarker, what's number two?
Number one on the list. Number two.
Two. Right. No, that was number two.
That was
number one.
Number Sorry. One.
Chris Neumarker. Let me get the music. Dun, dun, dun. Chris Neumarker.
No, we have big personnel news. Big med tech leadership news, which is that, you know, Baxter CEO Jose Almeida retired. They were saying effective immediately. So they have an interim CEO now, and they're looking for a new leader over at Baxter. And Almeida's been a big figure in this industry for years and years.
Anything,
years and years. I always wonder though about the retirement for some of these guys. Come on, they don't retire. They take a break and then they realize how much they miss it and they come back, right?
Right.
But so it'll be interesting to see if he really does stay retired, because he's been he's been in industry for the longest time. He's been an impact on a lot of different companies. So it'll just be interesting to see if he actually is just kind of needing a break, or will we see him again fairly soon, kind of driving some cool innovation. But you know, anytime there's turnover like that, it's concerning for the organization, I imagine.
Sure. Yeah. It's definitely, it's a new person comes in with their own perspective and their own objectives. And certainly I think they're brought in with the idea that they're going to change things one way or the other. I don't think anyone ever comes in and says, nope, you're doing great. So we'll see where Baxter develops. But he's Joel Almeida. Yeah, he's been I met him. He was the CEO of Covidien. I interviewed him down again, another Massachusetts medtech company that that we don't have headquartered here anymore. But I remember going down to his offices down there. That was a bit ago. But you're right, Rachel. He's he'll be back for sure
somewhere. And it, for now, the interim CEO is Brent, you know, Schaefer, who, I mean, you know, has, you know, held some, you know, prominent roles in the, you know, in the industry, you know, he's, you know, a former CEO of Cerner, you know, and then, you know, previous medtech leadership experience at Philips and Hillrom. So they have a experienced executive, you know, leading the company for now as interim CEO. So.
And as they have a new coup as well, a COO,
we love
right?
A new Heather? Coup.
Heather Knight was elevated to a chief operating officer. So
she's really great. I've heard her speak at a few conferences, and I saw her appointment. I was like, oh, that would be really great. That's awesome. She seems like she's a good fit.
Yeah, she was going to be our keynote at Device Talks West.
But then why do I never Hurricane get out Helene. To California? I'm going to have to put it on the calendar.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Hurricane Helene hit a couple of weeks before. And
they had some stuff going on in North Carolina. But, a little rough.
But we're happy to have Cecilia Soriano at Device Talks Boston. She was also going to speak at Device Talks West and couldn't. But she's going to be speaking at Device Talks Boston and talking about how Baxter responded to the damage by Hurricane Helene and how they are building their way back. So it'll be a great conversation. So looking forward to that. So, all right. Well, Rachel, once again, the gala is sold out.
Gala sold out.
We still have tickets for the symposium.
March
6th at the Renaissance in Seaport in Boston. And people can go to massmedic.com to buy tickets.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun having
Fantastic.
You here. We'll definitely have you back.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It's nice to have someone other to talk to, right, Chris?
Yeah. It, kind of tired. It's nice. Yeah. I mean,
we get a little sick of each other.
We're like, like, could you clean the dishes, Chris? Come on.
I just filled the dishwasher and there's a dirty dish in the sink, Chris Neumarger.
It's called paper plates, guys. Paper plates, yeah. They're eco-friendly now.
Let's go to Costco. Yeah. There you go.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel. Say hi to Brian for us.
I will.
Well, Maria Atenduaga, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So full disclosure, folks should know that we recorded this interview once and I screwed it up and I didn't record Maria's audio. So we're doing this again. She's kind enough to spend time, but we now are a week older and wiser. So I'm sure we'll delve into subjects much more deeply. And you've spent the week at J.P. Morgan. This was your first J.P. Morgan as a celebrity. How was it for you as the winner?
Yeah,
of the...
that's true. It's true. it's interesting, you know. I mean, it. I don't know. It's a humbling experience because people come to you. It's like, oh, I've seen you. You're the one with the big check in the picture. And it's like, I think I recognize you because I see your picture on LinkedIn. It's not even, you know, like on the news or anything. It's LinkedIn. That's how everybody finds found out.
That's right.
Is lovely.
That's great. But it must be nice to be able to go into a setting like that and have people approach you as opposed to having to go up to everyone and in a minute and a half share your life story and see if there's someone who you could help, someone who can help you with your company.
Well, definitely, it's a conversation starter. Like, you know, what is that you do? What did you win? Yep. Tell me what about the big check? A lot of questions about the big check. Flying all the way from Toronto.
Do you have it on you? Do you have the big check on you? No, I don't have it on me. No.
I don't know if you see it here, but okay. So it's right there in my living room.
Oh, there it is. Okay, there's the big check.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, there is a video on YouTube. You could probably like, with my kid and my nanny and my husband flying all the way back with a big check. It was interesting.
That's awesome. So we're gonna hear the story of Samai in a moment, and it was the company that that again you won the overall award of MedTech Innovator, and you were at AdvaMed and gave the presentation and all that. So congratulations on that. But before we get into the company story, we'd love to find out about our guests and how they got to where they are today. So what brought you initially into healthcare, and then we can talk about what brought you into MedTech.
It it's interesting. I mean, I'm originally from Colombia. Obviously, I have an accent. I'm the daughter, the oldest daughter of two physicians, an ENT surgeon, my mom, an anesthesiologist. I graduated very, very young. I was 16. I did very good at the SAT scores. I was one of the like top five in the whole country. And I asked the questions, what's the most difficult thing that I could do? The question, sorry, the answer was medicine. And, you know, having brought up by two physicians who actually were entrepreneurs themselves, they founded a private clinic, the largest one in the city where I was born. I decided to go into medicine, and that's how everything started. And I eventually relocated to the U.S. to become a pediatric plastic surgeon back in 2007.
Oh, wow. So how did you center on that specialty, pediatric plastic surgeon?
Oh, gosh. I guess every medical student goes through the same hassle, right? Like, what am I going to do with my life? Believe it or not, I'm very science. I mean, I really like being a nerd. Like, I really like science. But at the same time, I enjoy arts a lot and social sciences. And I completed plastic surgery rotation in Colombia. I found it interesting enough to spend additional time abroad. So I ended up doing approximately 6 to 9 months here in the U.S., it was at Boston, at Harvard, Mount Sinai in New York, and Baylor College of Medicine. When I was rotating in Harvard Medical, I met a pediatric plastic surgeon. He's super famous. He did science at the same time while he also like operated on little kids. Mm-hmm. His results were outstanding. And more importantly, he was a very special surgeon because he was very into science. I mean, like very, very smart. He thought as an internist, you know, like, he was very complete, right? The whole thing. He was, mm-hmm. A Renaissance man. And I, you know, he inspired me to become somebody like him. And when I told him, he was like, Maria, come on. Really? I mean, you're crazy. You need to realize surgery is very tough for women. You're from another country. You need to, like, validate everything. I don't know a single Latino woman doing plastic surgery. And that's how everything started. I really like difficult things, to tell you.
Were there unusual, usually high hurdles for you to get into that specialty? Did you find what he said to be true?
Of course.
Really?
So, oh my gosh, that's a long story. Probably another podcast. So I spent 40 years doing genetics research. Plastic surgery is considered to be one, if not the most competitive specialty to get into. I mean, there are different reasons. Obviously, it's very lucrative. A lot of people want to do plastics, right? So it's they are always trying to find the best of the best. So either you're very good with your scores, you have a lot of extracurricular activities, a lot of like, you know, research. So what I did was, you know, trying to fill the gaps with those 4 years that I spent back in Boston. I did a lot of research. I published in Nature, New England Journal of Medicine. I presented everywhere. I was on the news to the point that I even got a green card in less than 3 years.
Wow.
So the government, the American government gave me a green card to stay here because of my contributions to the research community, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I obviously did very good with the scores, the exams that you have to present it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I had a lot of interviews, to tell you the truth, probably like 11 or so. I ended up ranking all of those programs, and I matched into the University of Chicago. That was back in 2011.
Okay. So did you ultimately practice?
No.
You know?
No, I did not. This is where it gets super interesting. So in whole transparency here, I tell this story a lot, especially lately with this whole thing about Maria being a plastic surgeon and becoming a medtech innovator, how that happened. So I experienced discrimination. Right. Unfortunately, I was heavily scrutinized and excluded from training opportunities because many people in the surgical department, they weren't really comfortable with having me. You know, I was the first woman from Latin American school to have ever matched into plastic surgery.
Wow.
In the history of the U.S. I didn't know that, by the way, until that happened.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's big news, but a lot of people knew about that. And they suggested, you know, that I was part of a minority quota, that I didn't really belong there. It was a very difficult environment. I complained. I was literally fired. I mean, they didn't renew my contract because I rocked the boat. And at the time, my grandmother died from COPD. I just decided to leave clinical medicine for good. I was too traumatized to continue doing anything clinical or going to another, either surgical residency somewhere else or into another specialty. I just decided to do something that was, that I was as passionate for. And coming from Colombia, having experience, medicine since I'm a little kid with my parents, I really like, working with people in underserved rural communities. I went to Global Public Health, and I did a master's of public health at the University of Washington. I spent some time working in the global health sector, and then I had a second opportunity to join UCSF and UC Berkeley's Master's of Translational Medicine under a scholarship from Gilead. And during that program, and this is where it gets super interested because of the MedTech innovator story, is that during that program, I enrolled another program that it's called SMDP. It's for minority students, and it's sponsored by AdvaMed. That was 2016. I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, right? Like, I've done all these masters. What should I do now? I mean, I'm old. So they paid me to fly to Minneapolis to explore medical technology at AdvaMed's annual conference. And during the MedTech Innovator Finals, I recall clearly watching Paul Grant introducing the program and the finalist for the grand prize. I think that was the very first time that they were doing it during the AdvaMed conference. And this was the very first time that I've ever seen anything like that, like a competition of a startup. I didn't even know what startups were. I saw Jamie Haggard win from Greenstone Medical taking home the big prize. The competition was so engaging. I really liked what I saw. And then the light bulb went off. And I was like, you know what? I could envision myself bringing scientific projects to millions of people in need, like doing this thing, like the global health idea that I had originally, but with technology, something that it's more aligned with who I am and what I really, really like and enjoy. I mean, I like the social sciences, but I really like science, right? I'm very geeky. I really enjoy it. And so, yeah, I thought, you know, this is going to be the ultimate fulfillment for me as a physician. And the only thing is, like, again, I mean, nobody else looked like me in the whole conference room, except, you know, the group that was brought through, you know, with the program. So I told the program director that I was going to be on that stage someday in my life. And that I would, you know, that I would do that. It was like, well, okay, Maria, I mean, good luck. Anything you need, we'll support you, but it's really hard to become a startup founder. I really like challenges. I really enjoy proving people wrong. And that's how I started MedTech. Yeah, it was literally the challenge of becoming a founder.
That's amazing. And folks who are wondering, yeah, we talked last week, but I missed this entire storyline, and I don't know how. It's really fascinating and horrible, and I'm sorry that the path here led you over some unfortunate situations and wrong situations. So,
but that's okay, Tom. I mean, after so many years, I come to realize that sometimes things do happen for a reason, and I'm definitely happier here, and I think that I'm going to impact many more people doing this than, you know, saying doing plastics, right?
I think that's definitely going to be the case. So let's talk about Samai and the inspiration for that. I think you mentioned earlier on your abuela. Were you taking care of her or talk a bit about that relationship?
No, I was not. My grandmother was a very strong-willed, independent woman. She became a widow, like similar to everybody else in the family. I mean, all of the women in her family are very strong-willed and opinionated. So she lived alone, but she suffered from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. And I sort of like, you know, ever since I remember, she was very short of breath, very fatigued. She was always very, you know, debilitated in general. So it was a tough condition to have. And she eventually died from COPD. And I was at the crossroads, right, when I was doing the plastic surgery residency and they kicked me out. And I was like, you know, I need to find something that is that truly inspires me to work hard every day, and I usually make a lot of decisions around my family. Originally, I wanted to become a pediatric plastic surgeon because of my little sister. She has cerebral palsy, and the inspiration was that it was very difficult for us as a family, for my parents, to find reconstructive surgeons to like fix her legs, right? Because now she can't walk. She couldn't do it before. Intellectually, she's fine. She's actually a lawyer. But we experienced that firsthand as a family. And I wanted to become a pediatric plastic surgeon because of that. And then now with my grandma, we experience everything as a family. And obviously my mom, I'm very close to my mom. I'm the whole, you know, ordeal with COPD. And so let's talk about COPD. Let's, you know, for numbers in the U.S., there are approximately 3 million people affected with it, but only half of them are actually diagnosed. That makes up like 5% of adults in America. There are 150,000 people dying from COPD every single day. If you wanted to go global, there are about 500 million people.
Wow.
3 million deaths every year. And we are spending $4.3 trillion every year just in COPD. So, I mean, I assume one of the reasons why we won the MedTech Innovator Award, it was precisely that, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's a very common and prevalent disease that is still underserved, underdiagnosed. It has a lot of issues and problems. And more importantly, what SAMICE does is that we're trying to do or solve the problem that killed my grandmother. So the current practice of monitoring COPD patients relies on patients, on people telling you how they feel. Mm-hmm. So they self-report their symptoms. I'm coughing, I'm short of breath, I cannot climb the stairs, I don't want to move because, you know, I feel like I'm going to die. Or sometimes they use pulse oximetry, the little tiny device that you put on your finger. But it really takes years for patients to learn how to identify the signs of the respiratory crisis. We call them exacerbations in medicine. So it's a whole, you know, chicken and the egg situation. We are missing 50% of those exacerbations. They go unreported. They don't get diagnosed. They don't get managed. And that's driving, obviously, the hospitalizations, the deaths, et cetera, et cetera. And the technology that exists today, it's truly confined to the hospital. So there is a problem of accessibility. And obviously, it's expensive. Every machine costs $80,000. Mm-hmm. So now we're trying to do something from the home that's continuous, that provides longitudinal data for patients with respiratory diseases. We really want to go beyond just COPD, and we want to do it in a very affordable way. Right now, our prototype costs only $70. At massive, you know, large scale, could probably cost just $20, just like a Fitbit.
Wow. Well, talk about the technology you're using too. So you're measuring something inside the lung. What are you measuring, and how are you doing it?
Sure. So the name of the product is Sylvie, after my grandmother. Her name was nice. Sylvia. Yes. So it's a monitoring system for patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. That's our first indication. What we do is that we measure the changes in the acoustic resonance signatures, that's how we call it, of the patient's chest. And we use that resonance as a proxy to tell you lung function parameters, meaning the numbers that are coming out from an $80,000 machine that is called plethysmography. Right now we have different models. We can go over the numbers in a few minutes. We could do FEV1, forced vital capacity. We can actually diagnose COPD. We can tell you air trapping, if you have it or not. We can classify the different levels of severity. We can do a lot of things. It's actually pretty powerful. I never envisioned my idea, because I'm not even an engineer, and I had this crazy idea, and we can talk about the idea and how everything was originated. I didn't envision this to be so powerful, to tell you the truth. So that's what we have. It's a wearable device. It's 14 centimeters long right now. That's a prototype, about 32 grams. It's attached to the chest. It has a mobile app. It has a clinician portal. The wearable, it sends broadband signals, white noises, and stimuli through the chest from the back to the front. It makes the whole entire lung resonate, and that's how we are, you know, sort of like capturing the data, the resonance all the time. We process that with our own, you know, proprietary algorithms. We track those changes of resonance, and that's how we can figure out, you know, for example, the trapping. We make most of those analyses. So it's called a spectral analysis of the lung, meaning it's like, you know, what people do in audio engineering is mainly the same technology that we use for like hearing aids and headphones, but applied to the lung. That's what we do.
So who initially had the idea of using acoustic energy to measure something inside the body? And is that done in other parts of the body at all? Are you applying it?
We haven't tried it somewhere else.
But no one else is doing, so you're the first one really to use.
No. So everybody else does radar or ultrasound. I mean, there is sound. There are acoustic technologies, but it depends on the level of the frequencies. You know, it depends if it's kilohertz or, you know, different frequencies or different products or technologies. So, for example, ultrasound, you can not even hear it, right? Mm-hmm. What we do is repurposing speakers and microphones that you buy off the shelf, that you find in your phones. And we that's what we do. I mean, we literally use very cheap components to make the lung resonate. And yeah, the idea, it came to me, believe it or not, because, I'm very good. So one of my superpowers is that I'm very good at analyzing data from different multidisciplinary sources, right? Like in my case, I'm married to a guy that does audio engineering, and we've been together for like, I don't know how many years, 17, right? And he's always doing experiments at home. Ever since I remember talking to him, he's in love with sound and music. And when I was talking to a pulmonologist back in, I think that was 2018, I was doing a business class with Steve Lang. He's very famous. He invented the Lean Startup methodology. So I did 100 customer interviews. And when I was talking to this pulmonologist, he was telling me about a biomarker or prognosticator that he's been studying for like a decade or so. And he thinks that this is going to be revolutionary if we had the opportunity to sort of like introduce it into the standard of care. And that's called air trapping. It is one of the numbers that you could get from the plethysmography machine, but that right now we don't really use it because there is no way to measure it outside of a hospital, right? The spirometers cannot measure that number. So when he was talking about how patients started to sort of like develop small pockets of air that trapped the air that couldn't get out, and the pockets would eventually become larger and larger. And that was sort of like the first sign for all things. I mean, like the COPD getting worse, exacerbations, yada, yada, yada. So he was talking about this thing about the pockets of air, the trapped air. And for some reason, Tom, I just literally, and this happens to me a lot, I had a deja vu moment. I went back to high school. I was like 15 or 14. I was doing a physics workshop. I remember exactly the classroom. I even remember the teacher. I actually sent him a message on Instagram. It's like, because of you, Sam, I exist. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow.
And I remember doing these experiments with audio and with light, right? Like we were, you know, doing all these things, you know, the students are learning about, you know, physics. And I remember the concept of resonance and how, for example, musical instruments have different resonance frequencies, and it's very, you know, like very unique to each instrument, and how the resonance might change, obviously, depending on the characteristics of the object and if the object has more air or less, so that resonance changes. So that's exactly how everything came about. And I called my husband, Ricardo. And a lot of people know him already because he's been with me at all of these, you know, events in MedTech. And I called him on the phone, like, Ricardo, I think we could probably use what you do. I mean, like, the things that you're very good at, but in medicine. And he was like, no, I mean, I don't want to work with hearing aids anymore. He was like, I'm done with hearing aids because he has worked with hearing aids in the past. I was like, no, look, I have this crazy idea. But it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, I'm not that stupid. So we had this, you know, very short conversation, you know, 2-3 minutes. And I was like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I mean, we started doing a lot of experiments at home. Obviously, I learned a lot of things about engineering because I have to, and eventually became the inventor of the technology. So he sort of like became my mentor, you know, explained to me a lot of the things. And we eventually obviously had to hire contractors because he's still working for Google. He has no time to do these things. But that's how everything originated. And so, and I keep telling people, if I hadn't married Ricardo, really, I mean, I wouldn't be inspired by like music and sound, right? I mean, I would have never thought of it. And to the point that we now have 8 granted patents, actually. We have 22 more pending. I don't know why nobody had ever thought about doing that with a lung. I have no idea.
So,
this is still a question.
So where are you in the development of the product in terms of trials and things like that? How has that process been?
Sure. So it's been a long process, especially because of the pandemic. It took us double, you know, more time, probably double the time. So we have completed significant developments on hardware and software. So we actually have a device that's 3D printed and works wonders. It has been, I mean, like we've de-risked the technology finally. We have validated technology on 450 people so far. And we can do a lot of things with that technology. We can, for example, tell you if you have COPD or not with 93% of precision, and we can differentiate between healthy and diseased. We can, for example, stratify if different degrees of air trapping, the prognosticator that I was telling you about. Our air, it's called AUCs, or area under the curve, and that's the way how scientists talk or publish that, about between 92% to 99%, almost perfect, across 4 different classes. For example, normal, mild, moderate, and severe. We, for example, this is something super exciting for me as a, you know, as a well, not a clinician, but a physician, sort of practice. But we can see changes of pulmonary function after you use medication, bronchodilator use, albuterol, asthmatic, COPDers, and even healthy controls. Our AUCs, area under the curve, is 99. And we can also actually tell you, we can actually match the number for FEV1 with 82% of accuracy and for forced vital capacity. So those are the two main numbers that clinicians use in respiratory. So for FEV1 is 82. And for forced vital capacity is near 90%. And we are just starting to build these models, right? I mean, this can get better and better. The more number crushing we do, the more patients we test. It's super exciting. I'm really excited.
That's amazing. So we don't see a lot of device innovation, at least historically, in the respiratory space. There are fits and starts. Why is that? Is it particularly difficult? The market's huge, as you pointed out. I mean, it's...
It is. I was discussing... So, JPM, thank you for asking that. I was talking to a pulmonologist from Genentech 2 days ago. And I asked him the same question. It's like, look, I'm not a pulmonologist. I have no idea. But why is it that everybody just wants to do cardiovascular? Like, I'm frustrated. Because most of the money goes into cardiac, neural, and the robots, right? Like surgery, obviously, the things that are pricey, right? That you can charge more. But for me, especially as a doctor coming from Colombia, there is such a huge and gigantic need in respiratory, and very few companies are doing true, like, you know, everybody's doing incremental innovation, like digital cytoscopes, right? And that's it. What he was telling me is that the lung process is very, very hard to figure out. So there hasn't been a lot of technologies over the past few years. In fact, spirometry was invented 170 years ago.
Wow.
And one of the things that he was telling me is that the lung behaves. So the way how the lung is diseased is very, for example, different from neuro or cardiac, meaning that there are many more confounding factors, right? Like, for example, you're breathing every day, right? So you can get exposed to either viral infection, pollution, humidity. There are 1,000 things that could definitely alter the evolution of your respiratory disease. So there are many more things that are affecting the lung and that could deviate the, you know, natural evolution of the disease, which makes it way harder to manage, treat, and to invent even therapeutics. So even for him as a former person. And I didn't I hadn't realized that before. I was like, yeah, well, that's true. You know, like the heart, it's well contained, the chest. Yeah, maybe metabolic, like, you know, you're eating too much sugar. But that's probably one or two things. But for respiratory, there are way many more things because of the fact that you're breathing, right? Every day, every minute, there's something new that you don't even know of. And I hadn't realized that. So he told me that for pulmonary, it's actually very hard to practice because they don't know a lot of things. They cannot see it.
But so were you able to cut through that, you think, because your device is sort of testing things that are already measured, just doing it in a more effective way? I mean, you seem to, it probably didn't seem like it, but you appear to have made a lot of progress in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah. So what we really like to do here is I want to have the ability to help patients to understand their disease with numbers, right? Similarly to what Dexcom does with diabetics, right? And the way how I actually pitch the company is we are building the Dexcom for respiratory, and everybody gets excited because Dexcom. It's not only a $30 billion company with a single product, but, you know, it has revolutionized everything in metabolic and endocrinology. So that's what we would like to do because the patients really want to have access to their data, but true data coming from the lungs. They want to have the data or the numbers that we doctors use to make decisions on either diagnosis, management, et cetera, et cetera. So right now what we do as doctors is like, depending on the amount of cough or how they feel, we have a questionnaire, we have a score, and that's literally it. So, Tom, there is nothing else, just questionnaires. It's unbelievable.
Wow. And I think I remember talking about this last week when I didn't record what your answers were, but I imagine there's interest from, I mean, athletes are already strapping cardiac monitors on their chests. I mean, yes. Do they want their oxygen intake measure as well so they can track that? Do you have applications there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have thought about it. We just want to be very focused on like COPD, sure, and one indication for a start. But yeah, we've been getting even emails and requests from FIFA. We were discussing this last week. Yeah. It will make me very, very happy to tell my dad that, you know, that I could work with Barcelona, you know, or the Real Madrid or Chapega. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously there's an opportunity to use this for like high performance athletes or anybody, for example, a climber who goes to the, you know, Himalayas to climb or something like that, even cyclists. It could literally be used by anybody that has too long. So it's infinite.
So what does the immediate future look like for you? Do you expect to have a commercial product in some period of time, or what's that look like?
So if everything works out well, fingers crossed, we are submitting a breakthrough designation within the next couple of weeks. That's one of our main inflection points in 2025. We are also hopefully trying to secure a $4 million grant from NIH. It's our phase two. It's a resubmission. We're doing a lot of iterations on that grant. I think it looks great. I don't know. Hopefully the reviewers this time around will say yes. And we are working also on trying to get a strategic investment from pharmaceuticals and even payers, for example, in Latin America. So if we get that money, we will probably be kicking off our fundraise $5 million in the spring of 2025 to get us through the FDA. We want to have a first product that could be utilized by pharmaceutical companies and in the decentralized trials. There's a lot of opportunity there. We don't necessarily have to have a de novo, you know, clearance or anything like that for the algorithms, but that's an interesting market. In fact, most of our competitors are doing significantly well, which is good. Good for them, of course. That's good for respiratory, for all of us. They're making over $5 million, which is really impressive. I mean, congrats. And it's obviously inspiring for us. So they want to follow into their footsteps, of course.
And last question. You've done all this on, if I remember correctly, you haven't raised any VC yet, right? You've had all...
We have.
Oh, you have.
$1 million. So $1 million from a VC fund called Sentinel in Chile. We've done mostly SBIRs and non-dilutive, $3 million in total. And the rest is my husband's money. My husband's money. He
friends and
so
family.
Much in me. And friends and family. Yeah, no, a lot of physicians from my network. I even have investors who know me since I'm a little girl, like, you know, from like school, right?
Oh,
like,
wow.
People that I went to a school with, and they were like, we know you're going to make it happen because we know you. And you make amazing things, like, you know, how, you know, intense I am, how good of a student I was, et cetera, et cetera. So they really believe in me. So
that's fantastic.
It's very cute.
Excellent. Well, Maria, thank you for sharing your story on the podcast. Thanks for coming back and recording this again.
Oh, no. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us in this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, join us at Device Talks Boston. Go to boston.devicetalks.com, where we've announced speakers, and the agenda should be up fairly soon over the next couple of days. I'm putting this out on Friday, February 7th. I don't know what 7th is. February 7th. So it should be out next week on the agenda. So please do attend. The numbers look great. Really excited to see you all there. April 30th and May 1st. Join us for our first regular Device Talks Tuesday of the season with Acuity MD. That'll take place on February 11th. That's free, of course. You can watch live or on demand. Ask your questions either way, but we love having you there live. It just makes for a much more festive occasion. Please do subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network. Please do share this episode on LinkedIn. And while you're at that, connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn, connect with Chris Newmarker on LinkedIn. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Finally, Device Talks Minnesota. It's happening June 11th at the McNamara Center. It is registration is up, and we will be posting speaker information very shortly, but I promise you it'll be a great day of MedTech. All right, folks, thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. We've got another great episode coming to you in just a few days. Take care, everybody.